Dr. Eamon Shanahan, you're very welcome to talk about again today.
Amy, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad now. Thank you very much for joining us. And as always, you can get your queries into Dr. Eamon, guys. So get them in as quickly as you possibly can, and we'll try and get to all of them. We'll get cracking, will we, Dr. Eamon?
Absolutely.
Lady age 73, retaining fluid in her ankles and her knee and groin pain. Is this serious? What is the cure?
Okay, so just a general comment first. This week is certainly a lot cooler than last week, but it was noticeable, I suppose, that last week with the particularly hot weather we were getting, I was seeing two groups of people. People who were getting urinary tract infections because they're getting dehydrated and not able to keep enough fluids in the body. And secondly, ironically, people with swelling of the ankles. I think a lot of people will recognise the phenomenon that, and certainly last week would constitute and qualify as being very warm. Now, having said that, the situation is that swelling of the legs can be an indication that there's an underlying problem. I think our listeners said something about a pain in their groin as well.
Yeah.
The thing we'd probably be more concerned about is if there is swelling of one leg more than the other. But swelling of both legs in themselves can be an issue. The biggest problem, so the practical stuff is that it's uncomfortable. If you've got swollen legs and the skin gets stretched, it is unpleasant. It's actually, as I said before, uncomfortable. It may be an indication that there's problems with either the kidneys or heart or something else like that. But in that context, what you'll be looking at is not just the swelling of the ankles, but have you any other symptoms? So, for example, has the person found that they have recently had undue breathlessness? So tasks and exercises they would have taken that wouldn't have caused them any problems, they're now finding problems. The classic one would be somebody on, say, for example, a two-story house, and they're having to stop at the first landing or get to the top of the stairs, and then having to stop to catch their breath before they go on. Or if they're getting undue palpitations. In other words, while the swelling of the ankles can, or swelling of the legs can be an issue in its own right, you probably want to look at the bigger picture to see how the person is doing otherwise.
Just go back to that you just mentioned about the UTI there because of the change in the weather. Explain that one again.
Yeah, that's pretty simple and straightforward. Last week, we had temperatures up into the high 20s, if not the low 30s. And one of the problems is that there is a balance that we need to strike. People do not need to drink 5 litres of water a day. They don't need to drink 5 litres of water a day. Some people want to drink 5 litres of water a day, but that's a different kettle of fish. Typically, 2 to 2.5 litres should be sufficient for everybody. The problem is that there are a number of individuals who, for a variety of reasons, either can't or prefer not to drink enough fluids. And the problem is if they get dehydrated, the urine gets concentrated and they're more prone to urinary tract infections as a consequence.
Okay.
It's unfortunately a particular problem for the elderly.
Yeah, we get a lot of queries about UTI, so that's an important one for people to know. I think we love getting as much water into us as we can, and we think we're doing good, but we might be doing more harm. Please ask Dr. Eamon. A female, 61, got a small bleed, went to hospital for camera into womb. All was well. Doctor said it's very common in women ending menopause. It's happening since. What does Dr. Eamon think?
Yeah, I mean, so a definition of the menopause, and there's a number of definitions, but a definition of the menopause is where a woman hasn't seen a period of 1 year. Now, it's a very arbitrary definition, but that's the kind of working definition. The point being that if a woman hasn't seen a period for a year, and then if she starts to bleed again, then by definition, that's what's called a postmenopausal bleed. Now, not all postmenopausal bleeds are sinister or dangerous, but at the same time, they do need to be checked out. I think it's unusual, let's put it that way, for a woman in her 60s to continue to have vaginal bleeding unless she's taking a hormone therapy of some sort. That's as far as I could probably go with this. I think that in a situation like this, you probably need to go back either to your own GP or the gynecologist and say, look, I'm still having bleeding. Do I need to do something else, or is there something else that needs to be done for me?
Okay. Killarney lady in her 60s has had some strokes in the past and now has gallstones. Is there any way of dealing with gallstones other than an operation, as she feels she wouldn't be able to have one?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And that really would fall into the domain of our consultant and niece to his colleagues. So the situation is that, unfortunately, no, the answer, quick answer is no. There's no way of dealing with gallstones other than by surgery. You can ignore them, but that's not a good idea if you have what they call symptomatic gallstones, because you find yourself getting very uncomfortable. You get bouts of what is called biliary colic. It's a horrible dose, very, very unpleasant dose. And you can get an infection in the liver as a result. And that can be very sickening as well. And indeed, if you have already had strokes, you definitely don't want to have an infection in your liver. So that's the other side of the coin. I understand that the person is, or listener is, wary of and afraid of an anaesthetic, but it might be worthwhile talking to the anaesthetist to see what the options are. The difficulty, I suppose, is that where the gallbladder is it's too high up, really, I think, to have so-called spinal anaesthetic. But again, that's not my area of expertise. You need to talk to the anaesthetist about that. I think the reality is that there are people who have very serious underlying medical conditions who, for one reason or another, have to have operations all the time. Classic examples would be where somebody, say, for example, has an accident or falls or breaks something and they need to have surgery for that, and in an emergency, things will be done. Now, I appreciate this is not an emergency. This is what we call an elective procedure. But it does a balancing act that needs to go on there. The balancing act is the risks and dangers from not having the operation, as opposed to the risks and dangers of having the operation. I suggest the best thing to do, as I said, is talk to the surgeon and also talk to the consultant anaesthetist. And to be fair, if there's any concerns with your health, what the anaesthetist will do is they will carry out a pre-anaesthetic assessment. They will do an assessment of your health before you have your anaesthetic to ensure that the risks involved are minimised.
Okay, this is from a younger listener, and anybody who suffers from, I suppose, in the lead up to a period will relate with this one. I'm a woman in my 30s, physically active, eat healthily, not on the pill, and take supplements and anti-anxiety medication. However, I suffer so badly mentally 7 to 10 days before my period, and it can affect my body muscles too, especially my back and my legs. I hit a low mentally and I struggle. Is there any advice you can give to help me?
Yeah, okay, there's a couple of ways of looking at this. And I'm presuming because our listener is not taking any kind of hormone therapy, I will infer from that she'd prefer not to take any form of hormone therapy, and I can understand that. I think the thing is this is one of those places, and there are a variety of physical symptoms which can be very disabling. Fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, and indeed this kind of problem that you have in the lead-in to the periods, where various forms of therapy, specifically the version called cognitive behavior therapy, can be of real benefit. The idea behind that is that you focus on the symptom, and what you do is if you like, try to compartmentalize the symptoms, try to put it in a box to one side and allow you to be able to get on with your life. Now, for that to work, and this is the hard part, you need to find a good therapist, and indeed a good therapist you can work with. But if you're looking for a non-drug way of dealing with this, that's probably the most effective way of doing it.
Okay, what's the best cure for stomach bloating? I've tried bloaties, doesn't help much. I'm taking gluten-free brown bread, just feel as if my stomach is full all the time.
Yeah, I know. I've said it many times over, the afflictions of the gut in Western countries is down to the Western diet. Most of the gut symptoms we have are in some way or other related to what we're eating. I am interested to hear that our listener has put themselves on gluten-free bread, but are they on a truly gluten-free diet? And being a celiac myself, I know the difference between the two. The thing is that it may very well be that you need to look at an exclusion diet. In other words, take out a food group. So if you're going to take out gluten out of your diet, take it out properly. Don't do it by half measures, not just the gluten-free bread, but the biscuits, breaded products. Anything that has gluten in it, take it out completely. A lot of people do find benefit. About 2% of the population have celiac disease, about 10% of the population probably have wheat intolerance. And by the expedient of completely removing gluten from the diet, that may improve the situation. If that doesn't do the trick for you, then you could look at sugars. You take, put back in gluten substances and then take out the sugars. If that doesn't work, put that back in and take out dairy products. You know, you work around and you try to find what are the triggers for you, because the vast majority of gut problems are diet related. Now, having said that, this is only in the context that the person doesn't have what we call alarm signals. So, for example, if the person has persistent nausea or vomiting, if they have any change in their bowel habit, if they see blood coming from either end, either vomiting blood or passing blood, all bets are off. You need to speak to a doctor and get this checked out.
We're talking a lot more about the gut lately, aren't we, Dr. Eamon? As in, people are a lot more aware of the gut and yeah, how you have to actually mind it if you want to be healthy.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, one of my own particular bugbears is the abuse that the gut gets when we use broad-spectrum antibiotics. There are a variety of antibiotics that we should try to avoid it if at all possible. There is very good antibiotic guidelines that all doctors and general practitioners should be using, and there are certain antibiotics that we should not use. The reason being that they sterilise the gut, they kill off all the healthy bacteria, and people can be very unwell after taking them. So that's one of the things to be aware of.
Okay, another one. 65-year-old woman, heavy back and hips feeling and aching. It's a little bit, that's all she's giving us, is Joan from Tralee. That could be a number of things, I'd imagine.
So the heavy back and leg feeling, there may well be some form of rheumatism there. That's the thing that would come to mind straight away. Again, I'd be looking for the ways in which this is interfering with her day-to-day activities. For example, what way is she first thing in the morning when she gets up? Does she bounce out of the bed and she's grand, or is she completely seized up and stiff and sore getting out of the bed? That would be an indication that there's a rheumatism there. If, on the other hand, she's okay in the morning, but as the day goes on, she gets stiffer and sorer, it may indicate that she has an arthritis there. These are the kind of questions to ask yourself, but you'll almost certainly have to go and talk to your own GP about that.
Okay. Female in my early 60s. Sometimes I have throbbing pain in my two legs and it's very painful at night. What could be the cause? Could it be varicose veins? Feel sick with it. I'm on blood pressure and cholesterol tablets.
Yeah, varicose veins tend to cause this. Okay, the kind of trouble you get with varicose veins is they can be just uncomfortable. The reason being that if you've got really big varicose veins, it can stretch the skin and that can be uncomfortable. But classically, that problem, it tends to be worse by day. When you get into bed at night, all right, maybe initially there'll be a bit of discomfort, but once you actually get into bed and have been there for a while, the varicose veins will collapse. They're low pressure vessels. And what'll happen then is that the discomfort you'll experience should go away, and that'd be an indication that it might be varicose veins. If your legs are throbbing, it could be something else. It might have to do with circulation, but not so much the vein side of it, but the arterial side of it. Somebody somewhere just should probably check your pulses for you to see if your pulses are okay. That'd be as simple as taking off your socks and shoes and feeling for the pulses around your feet. These are a couple of suggestions. In truth, for something like this, you will need to speak to somebody. Will need to examine you for it.
Now, this is one that I haven't heard of before, Dr. Eamon. North Kerry lady in her 50s had Whittle's surgery done. She wants to know more about it and if it can be done a second time if necessary.
Yeah, so Whittle's procedure is, let me just a second, I think it's a thing called it's a procedure for the pancreas. basically what the problem is that something is affecting the head of the pancreas. What is the pancreas? The pancreas is an organ that sits behind the stomach. Its purpose is to produce digestive enzymes that help to break down protein in our diet. And it's also the organ that produces insulin. If there is a tumour or growth of the pancreas, and specifically if somebody has a tumour of the pancreas, then the part of the pancreas can be removed. It's a fairly major procedure. It's not a minor procedure. The quick answer is that you'd have to ask the surgeon, and interestingly, that you don't know why did you have the Whipples in the first place. Somebody should have explained that to you beforehand. Could you have it again? Really, that's a specialist question. That's something you'd have to talk to the surgeons about. I suppose it goes back to my point. Why did you have the procedure done in the first place? Was it for some form of tumour? And if you need to have it done again, what are your options? Because surgery may not always be the most appropriate option.
Okay, Dr. Eamon, we need to take a quick ad break there, and then we have to take the classifieds, but we'll be right back with you then after that, okay? So keep your messages coming in to 083 300 3300.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
Now, you're very welcome back to Medical Matters with myself, Amy Ní Rialda, and Dr. Eamon Shanahan. If you want to get your queries in, please do on 083 300 3300. Now, Dr. Eamon, before we move on to the next query, I need to give you a nice comment that's after coming in for you. Dr. Eamon, you're the best. You're a lifesaver to all of us. That's from Breed in Killarney. So fair play to you. At least we're making a difference here on Talk About anyway, Dr. Eamon. Now we'll move Indeed. On. Dr. Eamon, any advice for restless legs that keeps me awake at night, please? Thanks from Mary, aged 68.
Yeah, a desperately unpleasant condition. Yeah, it's a poorly understood condition, and it's very... horrible, because it's literally you're sitting there and the legs are dancing around underneath you, and if you don't move the legs, they just feel unpleasant. There are a number of medications, two or three medications can be used in this. A very tiny dose of, oh God, I think it's Pramipexole is the generic name for it. It's a medication which in larger doses is used as a treatment for Parkinson's disease, but in very tiny doses can be very effective at eliminating the symptoms of the restless leg. The problem is we don't understand why some people get restless leg, for that reason there isn't the cure for it, but there certainly is treatment for it, and I think your GP will be able to help you with that.
Okay, we have a few in relation to legs and things like that. There's another one here about pains in the knee. What causes it and what can cure it? I can't bend my knees at all, my knee at all. What cream can I put on the knee?
Okay, there's a couple of things there. First, we have no idea what age or indeed gender.
Yeah, it's a little bit vague.
But we can talk about this thing generally. The knees are actually a very complex joint. People think of them as a simple hinge joint that sort of, they sort of swing backwards and forwards. But there's more to it than that, as is often the case. In addition to the fact that they swing backwards and forwards, as the knee locks out, there's a slight turn in the bones, I think a bit of what we call rotation, which helps to lock the knee out, so as that when we're standing, we don't have to be constantly holding ourselves in place. So there's that. Inside the knee joint, there are cartilages inside and outside the joint. There are ligaments in the middle of the joint, the so-called cruciate ligaments. And there are so-called collateral ligaments. And then there's a whole bunch of muscles, the quadricep muscles, which are the ones in the front of the thighs, and the hams, which are on the back of the thighs. And all these need to be working properly for the joint to work properly. And that's before you even start looking at the surface of the joint itself. And like all bones in the body, the surface of the bone is covered with normally shiny, a very slippery substance called cartilage. The problem with that is that if one or more of these elements aren't working properly, then the joint won't work properly. The kind of things you'll be looking for, well, general things I'd be asking people is, apart from the pain in your joint, in your knee, does your knee ever lock up? Does it ever get stuck, or indeed does it give way? As in, like, you're walking along and suddenly you kind of stagger over sideways. These might be an indication of what the problem is. Again, start by taking what we call a good history. Talk to the person, get them to explain to us what it is that's caused, what is the problem that they have. And based on that, then you can sort of say, well, it might be this or that. I know that not as straight away, it's not the first line of investigation, but certainly somewhere down the line, people end up getting an MRI of the knee, because this can show what's going on inside the knee. As with most musculoskeletal problems, that is to say problems to do with the muscles, joints, tendons, ligaments and all that kind of sort of stuff, my own personal recommendation in terms of first protocol would be a physio. Talk to your own local physio. They are very good at doing an examination. They can often give you an idea as to what the problem is with the joint, and then recommend an appropriate course of therapy that in many cases will help relieve the discomfort for you.
Okay, staying with legs now, neuropathy pain, something I'm assuming means something to do with the nerves, but what does Dr. Eamon think about neuropathy pain, and what's the best approach to dealing with constant pain in the legs from this?
Yeah, I see. The problem there is that neuropathy is literally that it's a pain that comes from a nerve. Now, there are a variety of kinds of neuropathy, and there are a number of causes of neuropathy. So, for example, some people suffer from neuropathy in their feet, people who have poorly controlled diabetes, or people who have who take excess alcohol can get neuropathy in their feet. But you can also get it in people spontaneously. For example, the classic one would be there's a particular nerve in the face called the trigeminal nerve, and if you get a neuropathy of that nerve, then it's a trigeminal neuralgia, is what we call it. And these are horrible doses, and the way that neuropathy is described by people, it's burning, stinging, shooting, it's unpleasant. There are a variety of medications that can be used to alleviate symptoms. Now, obviously, as in this case, as in every other case, what you want to do is you want to try and find out in the first instance, what is it that's triggering the neuropathy? Is it possible that you can take away the underlying cause of the problem? For example, you will find neuropathy in people who have diabetes that's not well controlled. Oftentimes, getting the person's diabetes back under good control can make the neuropathy go away, and that's the best thing of all. So ideally, you wouldn't have to treat it. But for those people who do require treatment, probably the starting point is a medication called amitriptyline. Amitriptyline has been around for 40 or 50 years. in days gone by, in 35, 40 years ago when I was training, it was used in very high doses as an antidepressant medication. These days, tiny doses, literally one-tenth of the dose we'd have used to treat for depression, are being used to relieve the symptoms of neuropathy. Now, there are other medications that can be used as well. There's a group of drugs called the gabapentinoids. They are effective, but they are not without their own side effects. And then if somebody has ongoing severe neuropathy, once again, we'd probably refer the individual to our pain specialist colleagues. These are generally anesthesiologists by training who have a particular understanding, a particular skill in this. And what they can often do is use various forms of injection therapy to try to control the neuropathy for the individual. Neuropathy is an unpleasant dose.
Yeah, it's a desperate dose. I know a few people with it. It's just dreadful. Just had a message in front of me that's after flicking away there. I'm a 52-year-old woman. I haven't had a period in 2 years and I'm going through the menopause. Is it safe to stop contraception from a pregnancy point of view?
Good question. And that's actually a very reasonable question. Okay, the answer is yes. Now, let me just put a caveat in that. Different women will go through the change at different ages. I said earlier on that the definition of the menopause is when the woman hasn't seen a period for a year. What happens in practical terms is that when the woman goes through the menopause, she stops ovulating. And if she's not ovulating, then it's unlikely. In fact, she won't conceive. That's the end of that's that. It's exceedingly unlikely. You see, I suppose if you flip it over, if you say, supposing that at age 52 our listener said she wanted to have a pregnancy, obviously it would be very, very difficult. Not completely impossible, but extremely difficult. Again, I think you probably have a chat with your own GP about this. I think the answer is yes, you're probably safe. If people are feeling unsafe, there are a number of low-dose hormone treatments like the progesterone-only pill. But again, that's going to bring back periods. And why do you want that? Long story short, once you're certain you've gone through the change, you can check with your GP about that. You no longer require contraception.
Okay. Hi, bulging disc, C6, anything that can be done for the sensation down my arm and finger?
Yeah, and it's the same thing when there's discs. Okay, so the C6 is the sixth cervical vertebra. So if you put your hand to the back of your neck and you feel the lumpy bit at the bottom of your neck, then just above that is where the C6 is. And the nerve that comes out there is the one that it's one of the nerves that goes down the arm. And when there's pressure on that, it will cause pain. The answer is that left its own devices, the vast majority of these disc problems go away eventually, but you're looking at probably 6 to 12 months at least. Funnily enough, we were talking about neuropathy previously, and the kind of medications you use for neuropathy can be useful at relieving the pain you get from disc pressure. And again, if there's an ongoing problem, it may very well be that the pain specialist will need to inject it for you. Rarely, and it is very rarely, if there's evidence that the pressure in the nerve is such that it's not just causing pain, but weakness of the hand, such that things start to fall out your hand, then it may be the case that you might require surgery in the neck to take the pressure off the disc, off the nerve, but that's rarely done.
Okay. Now, this next one, I know you're not a dermatologist, so maybe you might direct them towards a dermatologist, or maybe you know yourself, Dr. Eamon, but is it okay to dye hair when you have dermatitis?
I have a number of women who'll tell me, who've told me under no circumstances, ever, 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 ever dye your hair. No, I'm talking about women who would have had allergic reactions, and I've had a number of women who've had really, really severe allergic reactions. I think, no, again, you're absolutely right, Amy, this is outside my area of expertise. I think that, and I may well be shot for saying this, but I think that what some of the colourists will do is patch test the individual. Mm-hmm. If there is a history of skin problems, they might just put on a small bit of the dye onto a part of the skin and see if the person tolerates that before covering the whole of the scalp, if you know what I mean.
They could go grey either. They could embrace the grey or the white hairs. That would solve it.
Exactly. Could do that.
I'm taking these tablets for pain in joints. Okay, I'm going to try and pronounce this. Etoricoxib.
Etoricoxib, yeah, I know the one. Yeah.
But my stomach has severe cramps since I started taking them. Is this normal?
Yeah, it's not unusual, but it's unfortunate. Etoricoxib is one of a group of drugs called the COX-2 inhibitors. They're probably the newest of the anti-inflammatories, but they themselves have been around for about 10 or 15 years at this stage. In the main, that class of medications are well tolerated. They tend not to cause tummy upset, but there's always somebody who will have reaction to it. There are other alternatives. There is a particular preparation of an older anti-inflammatory called naproxen. But that in with it is a second ingredient called esomeprazole. And esomeprazole is something that protects the stomach. One of the advantages of the etoricoxib is you need only take it once in the day. With this other medication I talked about, the naproxen esomeprazole combination, it's a twice daily preparation, but it might be a bit easier on the tummy for you.
Okay, this is quite a long one, Dr. Eamon, so you might want to have your pen in your hand, okay? I'm 61 years of age. I had a cardiac event in October 19. I'm presuming that's October 2019 and not October 19th. 5 months later, MRI on my heart found plaque. Angioplasty done in Beaumont Hospital. The doctor said he was going to do a stent. Instead, he did angioplasty and said in a couple of months, I won't know myself energy-wise. Unfortunately, I've slowed down, and in the last month, my calves were painful walking. My GP has sent a letter to cardiomyopathy UHK, 6 months waiting list. In the last few weeks, my legs are now affected by, it feels like a 5 pound weight in both my legs. I'm on aspirin beta blockers and BP tablets. My BP is behaving and I feel tired a lot. I have a GTN spray for when I need it. My GP said to walk every day. Yeah. I'm sometimes 3 walks daily up to 5 miles. I have my legs on top of a pillow at night and what I have never used before is a poof. Can you share your thoughts on my situation? This lady obviously is having a terrible time.
Okay, there's a couple of possibilities there. One of them, so to the best of my knowledge, our listener has been sent to the cardiology clinic in University Hospital Kerry because there isn't a specific cardiomyopathy clinic. Cardiomyopathy is a condition where there's weakness of the heart muscles. I think one of the things we need to bear in mind, the fact that our listener had a major adverse cardiovascular event, as they call it, a MACE, in October 19, indicates that she has circulation problems. These things never happen in isolation. You may find an organ, such as the heart, being affected by a problem with the circulation.
I should just say as well, it is a male. They've sent us in a text to let us know that it's a male.
It's a male.
Yeah.
Okay. Same difference. Okay. Same thing applies. The problem is that the circulation to every organ is affected to a greater or lesser extent. And one of the concerns, of course, would be that there is a problem with the circulation to the legs. So as well as a problem with the circulation to the heart, and the stenting and so on would help with that, it won't actually make a whole great difference to the problems with the issues in the legs. Now, for most of the circulation problems, you're looking at the appropriate combination of medications to try to control the symptoms. I think our listener said that there were 60, is that correct?
61, yeah.
I think that... 61, yeah. So the point is that this is all very premature stuff. This is something that you probably wouldn't see until somebody is in their 70s or 80s. So there is something else going on there that has caused this person to have circulatory problems at a very young age. My understanding is that what you're looking at is what's called medical management. It's mostly going to be down to the appropriate medication to try and keep circulation going. That's where things like the aspirin would be a benefit. Our listener didn't mention anything about a statin, and I'd be extremely surprised if they weren't taking a statin as well. The difficulty is that the medications can slow the progression of the changes in the blood vessels, but the medications themselves aren't without side effects. If there is a specific blockage somewhere, so for example, if our listener had a specific blockage of some of the blood vessels in their legs, there are ways and means of stenting those or bypassing those as well. So this is something. But to me, the picture here is of the person slowly, gradually slowing down. And again, I come back to the point, age 61, that's relatively premature, and you'd wonder whether or not there's some other underlying health problem. And that's all I can say, because I can't be any more specific than that. Is making our listener prone to all these problems in the first place.
Yeah, that was a very detailed email that we got in there. So thank you very much for that. And Dr. Eamon, thank you very much for your time today.
Not a bum. Take care of yourself, Amy.